Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly performing arts magazine. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This week, I'm pleased to welcome back a quartet of musicians who have been all over the KLW airwaves lately, the Real Vocal String Quartet. They'll treat us to, yet again, a live performance in anticipation of their appearance tonight at the Freight and Salvage in Berkeley. This Saturday, you'll be treated to a world premiere at San Francisco Opera of Two Women, with music by Marco Tutino and inspired in part by the classic Sophia Loren film of the same name. I'll speak with San Francisco Opera's general director David Gockley and conductor Nicola Luisotti about the work. The Stern Grove Festival gets underway this Sunday. I'll talk with Stephen Haynes, Grove Festival's executive director. He'll be joined in studio by Grammy-winning Christian Tumalan, director of the Pacific Mambo Orchestra, which is on the bill for Sunday, June 21st. Plus, regular contributor Peter Robinson shares film reviews of the new Beach Boys movie and Far From the Madding Crowd. Stay with us. That's an excerpt, Filia d'Oro, a beautiful lullaby with words adapted from an ancient Roman text, and music by Marco Tutino, sung by Anna Caterina Antonacci. An all-too-brief excerpt for contractual reasons. That excerpt was from the dress rehearsal of the opera Two Women, opening this Saturday at San Francisco Opera. Last week, I spoke with conductor Donald Runicles and Brian Emel about the epic, war-inspired Hector Berlioz opera, Les Troyennes, also currently at the opera. Well, another war-themed opera is also underway there. This one, a world premiere, co-commissioned by the San Francisco Opera with Teatro Regio di Torino, Two Women. More than anything else, it's the story of two survivors of the conflict of war, in this case, World War II, and Nazi-occupied Italy. A mother and daughter, uprooted from Rome, seeking refuge in the countryside of La Fonda, then devastated and, in fact, raped by the liberators of Nazi-occupied Italy, the mercenary Moroccan Gougier, who were key to the Allied effort to rout the Germans from Italy. There is hope in the end, though, as the women are indeed survivors and Italy rebuilds. The opera, with a luscious score by Marco Tutino, has a libretto by the composer Fabio Ceresa, adapted from the 1958 Alberto Moravia novel La Ciociara, that was the basis of that iconic 1960 film starring Sophia Loren. The titular two women heading the cast are Sarah Schaefer as Rosetta, and in the Sophia Loren role, the aforementioned and heard Anna Caterina Antonacci as her mother, Cesira. Antonacci is also undertaking the substantial role of Cassandra in Les Troyens in this same month here at the Opera House. And yesterday I spoke with San Francisco Opera's general director David Gockley and music director Nicola Luisotti at the Opera House, who they're also both credited as co-creators of this world premiere opera.
Maestro Luisotti, General Director Gockley, welcome to Open Air.
We're happy to be here.
Welcome.
Now, it must bring a certain amount of satisfaction as an Italian to bring to life such beautiful lyric music from a contemporary Italian composer, continuing the lineage of such masters as Donizetti, Puccini, Rossini. When did you first discover the music of Marco Tutino?
In 2007, I was conducting a concert in Napa Valley for the Sun Festival, and I conducted the Russian Orchestra, National Orchestra, and I was conducting Prokofiev Fifth in the time, Prokofiev violin concert with Joshua Bell, and a piece from a ballet from Marco Tutino. It was the Richard III. I was really impressed about the music and about also the composer. And we start our friendship. And step by step, I was interested in his music. I got some score from him. I heard some pieces that were already conducted by somebody else. And I fell in love for his music and for his attitude to write in the traditions of our fathers.
I understand part of your sell to David Gockley to premiere this Italian composer's work was that such a classic Italian works as Il Trittico and Girl of the Golden West by Puccini were premiered at the Met in New York.
Yes. In 1918, it was the last time that we heard an Italian opera performed for the first time in the United States. And it was at the Met. It was Il Trittico. And after 97 years, we are very proud to present another important Italian opera represented for the first time in the United States, especially here in San Francisco. I think that is the first time that San Francisco Opera commissioned a new Italian opera for the Italian composer.
David Gockley, the creation of a new opera is no small undertaking, and while we have so much to thank you for since becoming San Francisco's sixth general director in 2006, it's your commitment to bringing such new opera to life as Appomattox of Philip Glass, Jake Heggie's opera, Rachel Portman's, to name just three of the six for which a true legacy is being forged. So thank you very much for that. When did the process start for this particular opera?
I think it started about 3.5 years ago, and that is a little shorter than the average gestation for a new opera. We got it going very, very quickly, and the work that Marco submitted to us was done very efficiently, very quickly. We got revisions back to him on the synopsis, and then the libretto itself was created. And this was a very, I would say, on the short side, efficient getting to the point where we can rehearse the work.
And there's more to come in terms of premieres from you in the fall, when we'll be treated to the premiere of Dream of the Red Chamber by Wright Chang.
That is the fall of 16, not 15.
In addition to being musically lush, the audience will be treated to a very visually rich presentation with, I think, a very effective use of archival black and white film footage from World War II projections that really transform almost Wizard of Oz-like into the color of the sets.
Yeah, I mean, I think I should let Nicola speak to this because it's his heritage. And his family was very much wrapped up in the horror of World War II in Italy. And I would ask you, what has all this brought to you in terms of the importance of what happened in your country during that horrible time?
You're born in Viareggio in the Tuscany region. Do you have family members that were directly affected?
Absolutely. My mother, my father, my grandfather, my uncle. My uncle was in the Battalion of Monte Cassino. He was involved directly in the Battle of Monte Cassino, fighting with the Alliance, because after the September 1943, my uncle decided to be in the force of Alliance. And my grandfather too. My grandfather was get from Nazi in the September 1944 and brought to a concentrate camp in Dachau. And you know, it's a very sad story with a very important moment in our history, American soldiers decide with Eisenhower to come in our country and let the Nazi, push the Nazi in the north and get Italian people be free finally with all the joy that we can imagine. And my mother, still in the 70s, I remember that she was trying to cover her head with the hands when she was hearing the airplanes comes, because they were really bombing. It was a terrible moment. And all the story of the Marocchinate, when Moroccan soldier came to rape a lot of women, if you think that 60,000 women were raped in just a couple of days, and not just women, but men, children, old men, priests.
And these were the liberators of Italy.
Yes. You know, this is a very important moment in the history of our country and of our mutual history between Americans and Italian. For this reason, I would like that it was represented for the first time, performed for the first time in the United States, because when I spoke with many friends of mine here in the United States, they didn't know about this story, but they were completely involved. 30,000 American soldiers died during those four battles in Monte Cassino to save us. So it's, you know, my duty as a musician, as a man, as a human being, was to let the people know how I'm grateful to the American people for that.
The story, of course, incorporates some of this tragedy of the journey of these two women, yet we should be clear that there is a sense of redemption, that there is more to come after the war.
The intermezzo at the end of the rape explain to us that there is a hope. For this reason, we have that intermezzo, not just for musical reason, because it's beautiful, but because at the end, mother and daughter will come back to the life. There is a hope. Then the death of Michele will be something for everyone. I mean, it's a sacrifice. And at the end of this sacrifice, it will help Rosetta to come back to the life after that terrible experience, like that is the rape, of course.
The titular two women heading the cast are Sarah Schaefer as Rosetta and Anna Caterina Antonacci as Cesira, who, busy girl, is also undertaking the substantial role of Cassandra in Les Troyens at the same month here at the same house. This role of Cesira, or the Sophia Loren role in the movie, was created with her in mind. How was the Rosetta role in Sarah Schaefer chosen?
Well, you mean the casting of it? We were auditioning for Secret Garden, I think Nicola remembers, and we were trying to get young girls who had mature opera, well, you know, developed operatic voices, but who looked like they could play a 12-year-old. And so Sarah Schaefer came before us, and our artistic administrator, Greg Henkel, had heard her audition at the Curtis School in Philadelphia. And we loved her, and she did a wonderful job in Secret Garden. We said, "This is our Rosetta." So we hired her at the same time. We didn't know she'd grow a foot exactly. in the last 2 years. But she is almost as tall, or maybe a little taller, than Anna Caterina. But she still has a very innocent face. And the way she's costumed, you can believe she is maybe 16, 17,
yes,
but very well protected by her mother,
yes,
in their lives.
Yes. They They are so perfect on stage. I believe in them. All the cast, I have to say, is the kind of cast that can be put in a movie. Every character is perfect, and when I see them, I'm moved about how they act, how they believe in the story, and how Anna Katharina Antonacci is protective with her daughter. They seemed really mother and daughter together on stage. I'm really impressed about that, yes.
We mentioned the beautiful writing of Tutino, and I have to say, as a piccolo player, I particularly enjoyed Stephanie McNabb's playing last night, and especially in duet with Rufus Olivier on bassoon.
The orchestra did a fantastic job, but the score is very, very demanding. It's everything. You know, if you never thought about this, but when the music sounds simple, it is not. Simple. Mozart, that is very, sounds really simple, is very, very hard to play. And this La Ciociara for the orchestra is, and orchestra and singers, is very, very demanding. And what is easy, always so hard to do.
I mean, you're working with some superstars then after going through 5 hours of Berlioz with Maestro Runicles, also having Mozart in the repertory this summer, The Marriage of Figaro, and then this wonderful music of Tutino. They're working hard down there.
Yeah, they work. I have to say that Donald did a fantastic job with the orchestra and the chorus. All the cast of Le Troyenne is a miracle. I have to thank Greg Henkel to do this cast and David Gogley that did it fantastically. A fantastic job to build that. And all the cast in all this three opera in the summer is the highest level possible in all over the world. You can find better casts anywhere.
Well, I wish you a wonderful run of this and the coming season, and we look forward to more from your baton.
Yeah, thank you. I think that that we will have for our audience all the best diseases in the world, because this is our duty and this is our hope to have all the time the best in the world here.
Thank you both for taking time from your very busy schedules.
You're very welcome.
You're very welcome.
We're going to conclude with more of the music of Marco Tutino. Here is the beautifully reflective and hopeful intermezzo that Maestro Luisotti spoke of.
Thank you.
the fine musicians of the San Francisco Opera Orchestra under the baton of Nicola Luisotti from their dress rehearsal of Two Women. That was the intermezzo, music by Marco Tutino. Lucky you, dear listener, to hear that sneak preview, as the world premiere of Two Women by Marco Tutino is this Saturday at 7:30. For more information on the remaining performances of Two Women receiving its world premiere and a co-commission of the San Francisco Opera, visit the opera's website, sfopera.com. Good afternoon, David LaTulipe here for Open Air. Still to come, we'll hear about the new season of the Stern Grove Festival getting underway this Sunday at the Stern Grove. And Peter Robinson will be by with a couple of movie reviews. Well, the Real Vocal String Quartet has been making the rounds. If you're a regular KALW listener, you've heard them on Open Air back in April. And most recently, this past Saturday, double-dipping on both West Coast Live and as part of our five-hour live folk music fest. Well, they're that good. So why not have them back here on Open Air live in studio, since they know how to find our hidden studios here at KALW. And let's hear some music in anticipation of their performance tonight at the Freighton Salvage in Berkeley. We'll hear some music and then talk with them a bit. Here is the Real Vocal String Quartet. Thank you. vocal string quartet, violinist, vocalists Irene Sazer and Alyssa Rose, violist, vocalist Matthias McIntyre, and cellist, vocalist Jessica Ivry. A treat to have them here once again live in studio. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Well, you know, I'm kind of jealous because I see you guys singing and playing, and as a flutist, that's kind of hard. and if I do that, it's a very contemporary sound, which not so many people want to hear. So when did you first come up with the idea of incorporating voice into the string quartet repertoire? Let's hear from Irene Sazer on that.
It was an organic, over many years, kind of development. For me personally, I was a classical violinist growing up. I took private lessons all my years since the age of 7. But I was also kind of a closet singer-songwriter who loved, you know, all the things that I was hearing. I grew up in L.A. in the 60s and 70s. So it just was kind of a why not?
Yeah, it's a nice gimmick too. I mean, you've got that market cornered.
I guess so. But it really is following, you know, what we really want to do. That's the main thing.
What was the name of that last tune, by the way?
It was called Polska, and
the Falling Polska.
And if you guys know the great Swedish group Vessen, it was written by their guitarist. And didn't have any vocals in it. And Alyssa Rose arranged that for us.
Yeah, I was going to ask where you come up with these arrangements. Some of the stuff is original stuff that that Alyssa writes. Is that right?
We all write for the group.
Oh, fantastic. And then memorization must be part of the issue, or do you have two lines that you're reading at the same time when you're vocalizing and playing your instrument?
Most things are written out to begin with and as two lines. We try to leave the page when we can. We try to memorize as much of our music as possible.
Mm-hmm. You've created quite a name for yourselves on the world music front and that kind of repertory, discovering or bringing back to life mm-hmm. some melodies that haven't been heard in a long time and making these original arrangements, incorporating vocal music. And now you're branching out into more Americana stuff with a new release that you're working on, going into the recording studio to work on, and that I think is going to be featured this evening at Freight and Salvage.
It certainly is at 8 p.m. tonight in Berkeley. Come down to the Freight.
What was the impetus or the inspiration for moving into Americana?
You know, we bring music to the group that we love, and I think we love world music, and we also love American music, and I think we all write from our own influences, which are very diverse. Mm-hmm. I know I particularly have spent a lot of time learning and studying bluegrass and old-time fiddle, and I really love it, so it has influenced my writing for this group a lot, and it's great to have a singing string quartet you can write for.
One thing that I think, this is Irene again, one thing that I think that's interesting is that if string players learn fiddle bowings, which are really the phrasings, it's very similar to jazz and blues and rock. It really translates a lot. So when I have a student, for instance, and they want to learn jazz, if they're open to it, I'll have them learn some fiddle tunes as well.
And this Freight and Salvage concert tonight will feature all Americana?
No, it's going to be all of our repertoire. I mean, not all of our repertoire, but a selection of our repertoire. Yeah. So some from our previous CD, which is called Four Little Sisters, mm-hmm. Which ranges from Malian-influenced originals to...
A Brazilian choro?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, that didn't have a Brazilian... Could have a Brazilian song.
And so we have some stuff from our last record, as well as you'll hear everything that will be recorded this summer on our new Americana EP.
And then we have a couple of outliers, too, that are brand new. An originable, that's very originable, of mine and an arrangement of Alyssa's of a...
And Jess's
of a, what is it, Blonde Redhead?
It's a song by a pop band called Blonde Redhead.
Let's hear another tune. And then we'll talk a little bit more, and we'll talk about, I understand there's a Kickstarter campaign to help you along with this EP that you're working on. So more music and then more talk with the Real Vocal String Quartet.
This next one is called the Cindy Rose Waltz. And when we were in Stoughton, Wisconsin a couple years ago, I wrote this for my mom, who is a lover of public radio and also really likes waltzes.
Beautiful music indeed from the Real Vocal String Quartet. The Real Vocal String Quartet is violinist-vocalists Irene Sazer, Alyssa Rose, violist-vocalist Matthias McIntyre, and cellist-vocalist Jessica Ivry. Beautiful music indeed.
Thank you.
We do have time for one more tune. I'm hoping you treat us to one more.
That's fantastic, yeah.
Irene, what would you like to do for us?
Well, we're going to do another piece of Alyssa. This is really featuring Alyssa's, not only her arrangement of that Wesson tune, but these two originals, and this one is called So It Goes.
More music from the Real Vocal String Quartet live in the KLW studios here at KLW 91.7. Real Vocal String Quartet. Thank you so much for coming in, guys, and best wishes for that Kickstarter campaign. Tonight's performance at the Freight and Salvage. We'll have you in again soon, I'm sure.
Thank you so much for having me. Go to our website at
RVSQ.com.
You can also pictures in an RV.
Learn about their Kickstarter campaign at rvsq.com or go to thefreight.org to hear information about their performance tonight at the Freight and Salvage in Berkeley. No strangers to my next guest, the Real Vocal String Quartet appeared at the Stern Grove Festival recently. How lucky we are to have such cultural richness at our ear tips here in the Bay Area. And one of the most beloved Bay Area institutions kicks off this Sunday, Stern Grove Festival, making its 78th debut with the four-time Grammy-winning trio from Northern California, the Doobie Brothers, to the stage this Sunday, kicking things off. Here to talk about the festival briefly, about this year's 78th that gets underway on Sunday, is the executive director of the festival, Stephen Haynes. Stephen, welcome back to Open Air.
Thanks so much for having me. Great to be here.
The Doobies kicking things off. Not a bad way to go.
Bad way to start 78 years, yeah. It's legendary rock and roll icon from the Bay Area. It's so perfect. So we keep hoping that they're going to change the title of their one song, China Grove, to Stern Grove.
Oh, there's an idea.
We'll see.
Well, but pepper them with that. Maybe you'll get a treat on Sunday.
We'll try. You never know.
I bet you can talk them into it.
We'll try.
So the wonderful thing about Stern Grove that I've come to love is not only the incredible setting and the way it was revised several years ago, so it's very friendly for the audiences, mm-hmm. but there's such a diversity of acts that come into Stern Grove.
Yeah, we really try to mirror the diversity of the San Francisco Bay Area with the programming that you see on stage. And our mission has always been to provide work for musicians. And that goes back to 1938 upon our founding. So the shows are so diverse, like you're saying, David, from the Real Vocal String Quartet that we had 2 years ago. We're on stage with Geographer, Magic Magic, and Kronos Quartet all in one day. And this season is just the same when you see such diversity from the Doobie Brothers to classical to dance, this year country music with Mary Chapin Carpenter. So I think that is absolutely what makes it so unique. But because we're admission-free, we can take a lot more risk as well. We don't have to sell tickets, so we're able to really expand that diversity programmatically.
You must be more dependent. It has to be more than just the people that come and offer donations that keeps things running for Stern Grove. What's your fiscal model?
Absolutely. It's a year-round job for all of us on the operations side, the programming, and, of course, the fundraising. So much like yourselves that, you know, stream and broadcast your wonderful product for free. It is by and for the community, but relies upon the community support. So we have a wonderful board of directors, individual donors, corporate sponsors, private community foundations, as well as great support from Recreation Parks Department and Grants for the Arts. So just like our programming, our funding is also very diverse. But yes, every year, and it's quite a challenge, but we have to raise through contributions 100% of our annual budget.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that it's free to the public, donation-based, just get there early to get a good place. Talk to me about how the reserved picnic benches work.
Well, that's actually part of our membership program. So there's a few different ways to get those well-sought-out-after picnic tables. But if you become a member of Stern Grove Festival Association, seating and some parking is part of your membership benefits. We have all of our information on our website at sterngrove.org, or you can simply call our office. But in addition to that, we do have a lottery where each week we will basically do a raffle, a lottery of some picnic table seats that are still available for the general public. But the best way to ensure seating at those tables is by becoming a member.
There you go. You mentioned some of the diversity there. The Pacific Mambo Orchestra, we were expecting Chris John Tumulon at some point, but he had a problem getting here. So they're going to be a week from Sunday, Grammy Award-winning group, Hot Club of San Francisco the following Sunday, and standbys that always draw a big crowd, the San Francisco Ballet and the San Francisco Symphony. They've been a part of the festival for how long now? Quite a bit.
The symphony for all 78 plus years, actually. They go back to even before the actual formation of the Festival Association. The property was actually originally purchased by our founder, Rosalie Meyer Stern, in 1930. It was then gifted to the city in 1931 for $1. And that the caveat was that it had to be, all the events had to be admission free, but it was to be used for arts, recreation, culture, and pageantry. But then in 1932, actually, was the first performance in June of 1932, and that performance was the San Francisco Symphony.
Wow.
Yeah. That's so they've been performing even longer than the festival existed, but it was under the auspices of Stern Grove Festival.
Well, in addition to these Sunday events, you do some other outreach events and kids events.
Yes, actually, a lot of people don't know about these great opportunities during the summer months, but for almost every week during the summer months, we run a variety of outreach and education programs. We do these events called Kids Days, and you can reserve. They take place on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, and you can make reservations. We have, throughout the summer months, thousands of kids that come out, and it's really a great opportunity for kids because it's a fantastic one-on-one, almost one-on-one interaction with instructors and musicians. They could be learning about dance or instrument making. And this year, we're trying to give a little bit of a twist to our programs. We're calling them the Nature of Art or the Art of Nature. Mm. And we're really trying to combine those elements that go back to our tagline of In Concert with Nature.
And also for the kids, prior to every concert, from noon to one, you have a kids stage where they
do a kids stage. As you just said, if you're coming out to Stern Grove Festival, a lot of times you have to get there a little bit early, and you know, sometimes the kids don't like to sit so long. So we've got these great programs that take place prior to the program. Again, very educational, hands-on instruction from artist instructors as well. So a kids stage takes place every day at Stern Grove Festival on those concert Sundays.
Well, I wish you a fantastic number 78. Doobie Brothers kicking things off this Sunday. sterngrove.org for more information. Stephen, thanks for coming in today and have a wonderful festival. Looking forward to it.
And I hope you see you out there. Thanks again.
Music indeed at Stern Grove this festival, sterngrove.org for more information. We're going to listen to Peter Robinson for a couple minutes about some film reviews, our regular contributor to Open Air. Welcome back, Peter.
Hi, David. Good to see you here. And we're actually moving from the world of the mambo and the samba and all other good things to Victorian England. And this week I've been viewing Far From the Madding Crowd. It's a remake of a movie you may have seen in the 60s, and this time it stars Carey Mulligan as Bathsheba. She is the central part of this whole Thomas Hardy story, and I think this is a movie about choices, and choices in this case for women. With all Thomas Hardy stories, but particularly with this one, there are those high moments of drama. So you have sheep going over cliffs, you have barns burning, you've got what in fact is the foot and mouth disease, when this time sheep are being saved. And then you have little incidents where, in this case, Bathsheba has to make her choices. So this stays reasonably true to the story. It's set in Dorset, and there are some wonderful landscape shots of the Dorset countryside, which is farming country, as the story progresses. Now, what is the background to this? Well, the background is that Bathsheba is a small farmer, but in fact, later in life, she will have a huge inheritance. And early on in the movie, a shepherd who also happens to be a farmer approaches her. He has the neighbouring land, and he, in a strange scene, actually offers her the opportunity of marriage. Now, we're talking about England in the late 19th century, and I think the film is a bridge between, I won't want to use the word women's liberation, but women coming into their own right, and then what eventually will emerge into the suffragette movement. So marriage, just as in any Jane Austen movie at the beginning of that century, becomes critical. The shepherd, who's played in this case, and I should tell you his nationality, he is Belgian. So if you think the Dorset accent is more Antwerp than Dorset, you would be right, is really the key character in the film. The other two lovers, one is played by Tom Sawbridge. He is the sergeant in his bright red uniform. And take a tip, the sword play that he demonstrates. Remember, often in Thomas Hardy, the sword is a phallic symbol. So as they meet each other, that is Bathsheba and him, in the grove, in the hollow ferns, and we have a little bit of sword play, let your imagination wander and guess what this guy is up to.
I will do that.
And then there is the third character. So it's not just three men and a woman. It's not just two men and a woman. It's beyond a menage a trois. We now have three. It's played by Michael Sheen. And he does a really good job, as does Carey Mulligan. They're well-suited playing against each other. And here the story gets a little more complicated because he is the good, well-meaning landowner who comes to the rescue. So if you have memories of the 1967 movie with Julie Christie, this is a different type of character. Julie Christie was sex and seduction, playing it softly. Mulligan, I think, brings a bit more dynamism to this. She has scenes when she's horseback riding, scenes when she's shooting. It's really a treat for the eyes, a good reason to go back to the novel, enjoy it as it is now, just as a film that is far from the madding crowd, and it's playing at many cinemas around the Bay Area.
I love the colorful clothes you wear and the way the sunlight plays upon her head.
That's music as part of the second film that you're going to review. A little good vibrations for you, Peter.
Yes, well, of course, don't confuse Good Vibrations, the song of the Beach Boys, with the store in San Francisco. But that can both get you going in different directions. And this is, I think, a very satisfying pop biopic, which I think, unlike many of them, does not focus on the musician playing to the crowds in that style. I think it's much more a psychological study of Brian Wilson. The movie is Love and Mercy. And it has two different characters. It has the young Brian Wilson, played by Paul Dano, and then as he progresses through his mental illness, played by John Cusack, the older Brian Wilson. And I think at some parts, it's quite a sad movie. You do see the impact of drugs. You recognise the manipulation of the doctor psychiatrist Eugene Landy, played by Paul Giamatti. And I think that whole issue between patient and control is very well put together. And then, of course, there is the rescue by Melinda Ledbetter, to whom Brian Wilson is still married. And I think one of the great scenes is when they first meet, because she is a car saleswoman selling cars, not cars, but Cadillacs. And she doesn't even know, as this young, or youngish at least, Brian Wilson comes in, that he is the movie behind, the music behind the Beach Boys. She's played by Elizabeth Banks, and again, a very strong rendition. A couple of things I brought to the movie, which I think helped me understand how music gets written.
I hope it wasn't something from Good Vibrations.
No,
the store.
No, that came later. I really began to understand how musicians hear sounds in their head. It made me think about Beethoven, totally deaf, but he could hear the music he was composing.
I can't believe what a perfect segue that was, Peter, about Beethoven, because I need to spend just a minute talking about the Beethoven Festival with the San Francisco Symphony, but finish
well, we'll
your thought.
We'll give you da-da-da-da all in a second. But this was, to me, really, really a good transition from the pop music, the Good Vibrations music, to how experimental Brian Wilson was and how he played essentially with different backup groups just in the studio. And one of the key lines, and I'll finish with this, is one of the musicians says to him, you've knocked them all out of the ballpark. And he said that includes Phil Spector. And I think, given the sad upbringing, the put-downs by his father, that little moment of endorsement probably gave Brian Wilson the right piece of encouragement at just the right movement. So if you like the Beach Boys music, see Love and Mercy. It's not just a music biopic. It's a psychological study. Highly recommended.
Thank you so much, Peter. Love and Mercy, the Brian Wilson Beach Boys movie. Currently in theaters. And Peter did mention Beethoven. Well, Michael Tilson Thomas and the San Francisco Symphony conclude the 2014-15 season with a 3-week Beethoven Festival current underway at Davies Symphony Hall. Just got underway last night. And is getting underway with a massive semi-staged version of the Missa Solemnis and reenactment of Beethoven's 1808 Marathon concert is in store for later in the month on the 20th, which includes, get this, as one concert, one evening of concerts, the Symphony No. 6, an excerpt A Perfido, Kyrie and Gloria from the Mass in C major, the Piano Concerto No. 4 in G major, the Symphony No. 5, the Sanctus from his Mass in C major, the Fantasy in G minor, the Choral Fantasy, a full evening of Beethoven, and then some as part of this June 20th. Again, if you're interested in, you should be interested in this interesting multimedia performance of Missa Solemnis, go to the Symphony's website, sfsymphony.org. I'm David LaTulipe. You've been listening to Open Air here on Local Public Radio. In fact, next week I'll be talking with Jonathan Biss, who is one of the soloists for next Wednesday's and Friday's performances of the San Francisco Symphony. He'll be performing the Piano Concerto No. 4, so tune in for that. A couple of words of thanks to Lizak Shalit, who's sitting in for Niels Swinkels, who's on vacation for a bit, and especially to Kevin Vance for helping out with the mix today for the Real Vocal String Quartet. Our shows are archived at our website, kalw.org, and send me an email if you've got some local group that you'd like featured on the show. My email address, david@kalw.org. Thanks for listening.